Online Trading Academy is a leader in investing and stock trading education. Sign up for a class today and learn proven strategies on how to trade smarter. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682 and register for a free workshop in Bellevue and other surrounding areas. Text Curley, C-U-R-L-E-Y, to 57682.
Got it. Thank you, Ursula. All righty, let's get Tom in here.
Show back on good footing.
Tommy, get in here!
There we are. Here the liberals took over on Friday.
Yeah, I feel a rightward tilt to this show. What's wrong with this
desk?
What's
wrong with it? Woo! Oh, that's refreshing. I want to thank Andrew for stepping in.
It was great.
And allowing you to seem like you were actually conservative.
That's right.
It's all perspective.
My moderate liberal stance.
Right. Like, wow. Look at that. So you get a chance to...
But I did bring you up a number of times saying, well, of course now, just for argument's sake, John would say.
Oh, good, good.
You know, so...
I do that when... It's funny, right, when you're... when Danny's filling in for you, I normally say, well, here's where Tom would say this.
Yeah,
all right, here we go. Shama Sawant, a march on Amazon. This happened on Saturday. This is the city council voting on the, I don't want to call it a head tax. I want to call it a jobs tax. Same way they like to call them tiny houses. I call them S shacks. Same way people don't like to call it they don't like to call it a used car. They call it a pre-owned car.
You know, it's funny though, because head tax has been adopted by the anti-head tax people.
I know. That's a shame. That's a shame. I don't like to see that.
It's snappy though. That's why, you know, they like it.
No. But I know they like it. But it's a jobs tax, because they call it what it is, and they call it a jobs tax. Because people, do we really want to tax jobs? That's what it is. It's a jobs tax. Don't call it a head tax. I went into Jason Rantz. He's got a show. I didn't realize he's got a show. And
don't worry, nobody listens.
I said, hey, listen, can you tell your listener that it's not a head tax, but a job tax? He said, I've already talked to my mom, and I agree that it is a job tax. Okay, so you want to hear some sound from some people that are upset that other people make more money than they do.
More?
This is Shama Sawant, spoke at the rally. Oh
my gosh. On Saturday.
Yeah, the gathering is blah, 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 blah. Jobs tax.
Yesterday, because of our strength, the majority of the council voted for a $75 million a year tax on the largest 3% of businesses like Amazon, Starbucks, and Facebook to build hundreds of units of publicly owned, permanently affordable housing.
Mm-hmm. All right. Hannah Scott interviewed the post-march Sawant, saying she understands the anxiety of the construction workers in the city. Because, as you know, the construction workers are upset that the richest man in the world decided not to spend his money on continued build buildings. So they're upset about the fact that they don't have jobs.
Yes. Right.
Yeah.
It's a possibility.
Because it comes from Bezos and goes down to them.
It's just a pause, Jim.
Right. Right. Nice,
Jim. The only solution.
By the way, just to put it in perspective, Jeff Bezos hates paying taxes so much. He set up here in the state of Washington for his book distribution business, how it all started. He would then take the orders from here, but he never had any inventory here, so he couldn't be taxed on the inventory. The inventory, I think, was in Nashville, and it came out of some other place called Insta something or other. So the books would be shipped out of Nashville. So he was even going to establish Amazon on an Indian reservation in California to avoid paying taxes. Anything he could do to avoid paying taxes. So do you think he's going to eat $20 million? Absolutely not. If he can avoid paying this thing, he will. And that's why he's asked every single one of the cities, of the 300 and some cities and down to 20 or whatever it got to, that each one of them was bending over backwards to cut taxes as much as they possibly could, which is a whole other discussion whether it's the right way to do business.
Right.
But he said, listen, you show me what you will do regarding taxes, and
yes,
I'll tell you whether or not I'm coming there to create 50,000 jobs.
But apparently, and again, I think this happened on Thursday and then Friday when you weren't here, the word is that they've agreed to a $10 million.
Oh, so $250.
Half of it. Yeah, I mean,
he
was on board on that. Now, we've only heard that secondhand from the building trades union head, but he says Amazon called him directly. So he's not dead set against taxes, but it's true. He fought the chance because it was such a new activity, online sales, that there were no sales tax paid in any of these states. Well, now 45 of those states are dinging him for sales tax,
right,
and he's accepted.
But he originally set up here, state of Washington, no income tax. Plus, he had the stuff shipped from somewhere else as an advantage for him when it came to taxes.
Yeah,
the reason rich people have money is because they make money and they avoid having to pay additional money.
That's right.
Right.
But that doesn't mean that they're not on board, and that's what I think the key is. If he can get on board, if he's willing to pay $250 head tax or whatever, job tax, whatever
yeah.
you want to call it, I mean, that shows some buy-in. Because what we'd like to do is get the company to feel as socially responsible for with the city workers as they do as a bottom line for their stockholders.
Right.
Their shareholders.
Here's more from Sawant. How long is it? 15 seconds. I'm so sick of her.
The only solution to beat back.
What's that?
I mean, this is just another rally. I mean, she's had lots of rallies. I don't know why we have to play all this.
I know.
The fight goes on, though. And what's her position? What's interesting about her position
right now?
Yeah, let's
go. I don't want to hear from her anymore.
Okay, so why was she holding this rally on Saturday?
Yeah.
Because the vote on Friday went 5-4 in her favor, in effect.
Yes, Tom.
For the head tax, but she was afraid that there was going to be some effort over the weekend to come up with to find a way to lure one other of the four council members who were against it on their side, and they would have to come up with some kind of compromise. And so she was making herself, you know, very visible, saying, listen, if you start to compromise by lowering it, I'm going to raise a ruckus,
right?
And then you'd lose that vote. So it's an interesting dynamic. You got 5-4 votes. If she doesn't agree, then it's a 4-4 vote. If they manage to get somebody else from the four to side with the five, it becomes only five again because she'll walk away.
Right.
Maybe.
But what they can do is, what people on the left, Shama Swant and the rest of them, you get it in at 70, get it in, tax the jobs at $500, and then slowly jack it up. Because once you've created the line from the job creator to the government, you just slowly move it up $50 or $100, whatever you want, and you slowly jack it up. So she could say, listen, rather than cutting now, let's get this, because they need one more vote in order to be veto-proof. And of the other,
but she's
there's other, what is it, four that are outside.
Yeah, it's four. It's 5-4. It's a nine.
Sally Bagshaw, they got to work Bagshaw. You got to find somebody that believes taxing jobs will not cause jobs to go away.
But the trick is, I think she was threatening to withdraw her support by having this rally. No, we're not going to go for any more compromises. Because remember, she was the one who wanted $150 million.
Right.
She wanted to double that.
Sure, because they're really going to do great with things with that. Spending more money is not the best way to create affordable housing. They should look for other things like changing zoning laws. This is John Scholz. He's the president of the Downtown Seattle Association.
Well, we need to relax the restrictions on housing we have across the city. It's illegal in about 90% of the city to build apartments. So if you have that condition in place.
It's illegal in 90% of the city to build apartments.
To build apartments and condos. Multifamily housing is restricted to very few areas within the city of Seattle. That is a key part of why we're in the situation we're in, when we've had lots of jobs that have come and the housing hasn't kept up.
Yeah. Well, you look at San Francisco. You follow San Francisco's calamity of errors for the last 8 years when it came to the zoning there. Similar situation, right? Because you drive through San Francisco, beautiful city, and they want to continue to have the historic neighborhoods that they have. And somebody want to come in and put in 25 units or 50 units, they wouldn't be able to do it because the zoning wouldn't afford it. Because they want to be able to keep parts of San Francisco as San Francisco. So same way in your neighborhood, Tom, somebody knocks down a single family home. Somebody wants to come in and put something in that has 8 units and it goes 30 feet high. Zoning won't allow them to do that.
Now, is that true about San Francisco? Maybe I haven't been. I have been to San Francisco a lot, but I haven't been out maybe to the neighborhoods. I think of San Francisco as much more built up than Seattle. I mean, they protect their row houses and the like, but I think of it as much more dense than Seattle. So, I mean, that's just surprising. I'm not saying
right. I've been following the zoning laws that they're trying, the same sort of thing. A lot of NIMBY folks that came in screaming about the fact that you're going to, too much density is going to cause too much problems when it comes to parking and traffic and everything else.
Yeah.
And they also want to historically keep what's
that's right.
And
see, that's the balance that you have here. And that's why we have this urban village notion. So there are certain areas which are allowed to kind of, you know, turn into these urban dense jungles, perhaps, but that was the idea, to somehow preserve a part of the neighborhood aspect of Seattle, but also allow for high rises, in effect.
But
the Seattle Times article about a week ago said that the zoning, all the construction is happening in certain pockets on Capitol Hill and Ballard in U District, and not in Magnolia, say, or Laurelhurst.
Today, I think there's a vote. Is it this morning at 11:30? When do they expect that thing to go through?
The vote's going to be this afternoon.
This afternoon.
Mike Lewis will be covering around 2:30.
Yeah.
Which way do you think it's going to go, by the way?
It's going to go the same way. I don't understand what the big issue is. It went 5-4 Friday. I'll be surprised if they over the weekend, after all of the hullabaloo we've had on this issue for weeks now, that one of those four will join the majority to get it six. I think it'll be a 5-4 vote. This is my prediction, a 5-4 vote. And then the mayor will come along and veto that. Mm-hmm. And then they'll have to go back to, if not square one, but at least kind of like renegotiate. That'd be my guess. Mm-hmm. Now, maybe something's in the works. If it is, it's been very hushed-hushed, so...
Because already Jenny Durkin, the mayor, has said she's not going to go for it. She'll veto it if she can.
She's trying
to meet with businesses and try to come up with some sort of compromise plan.
Yeah,
the idea that, and there's a piece in the Seattle Times, Danny Westneed has it, that do the business guys, the question I thought was interesting, does the business community have a place at the negotiating table? It seems like they're not really asked often what their input is when they're really the ones that create the money that the government takes.
Yeah, so Danny Westneed has a very specific guy who's gotten in a lot of trouble trying to build a huge hotel downtown. But independent of that, he's suggesting that you leverage this debt and you could end up not only setting up enough housing, more than the housing that even the $75 million will establish, but also enough to satisfy the McKinsey report. Remember, the McKinsey report came out last week and says we're going to need 14,000.
No, you know, 400 million.
No,
a
no, no
year.
14,000 new housing units.
Yes, yes.
Yeah, and 40 you know, million a year.
Mm-hmm.
And he says this, if we could leverage the debt this way, we could actually service that all. So his argument is we should go bigger. This is kind of it's a daring proposal. And that's why maybe it didn't get a lot of traction. He says he hasn't heard it from anybody from the city except for Danny Westneed to write a column about. But his argument is, and I don't know how economically feasible this is, but yeah, that we're thinking too small, not big. So he's even bigger than Shama Sawant in terms of, you know, how we can solve this problem.
Yeah. What do you think about the idea if you get some sort of social benefit from housing or food or something on that you have to work in order to be able to get the perks of a house? Would you agree with that? If somebody is capable of working, let's say it's a 25-year-old guy, he's capable of working. Let's say, because people keep telling us, oh, they're not all addicted to drugs and alcohol. A 25-year-old guy, you give him housing. Should you ask for something in return? Or can he live in that house rent-free, work-free?
I think that's part of like the Cadillac driving welfare mom, that I think it's more of a myth. Most of the people in those situations want a job if they don't have other issues, mental problems or addictions, and they would like that. In fact, that's what a lot of these people in these tiny villages, for instance, these tiny homes, they have people there working with them to get not only permanent housing but also find jobs.
Yeah.
So yeah, I think I don't think that is as big a problem. Most of the people that work in that field say that is a very, you know, a small sliver of people that we're talking about here.
Okay, because I looked online there, I found 17,500 jobs that pay $40,000 or more. And then I found 38,000 jobs that pay under $30,000 or more. So the jobs are out there. And this was in Indeed.com. These are all jobs. So I did it by zip code, and then I did it by income, and then I did it by education. So the jobs are there. So you're telling me the people that live in the S shacks, they want those jobs, that they really want to work?
The problem is that we don't know if they fit those jobs. If they're manual labor jobs, if they can do it, if they don't require any kind of education and schooling, we don't know that. But if that's the case, that's what these case managers are working on.
To get them a job.
Yes.
Oh, John. Okay. Yeah.
It's just that what percentage of the population do you think we're talking about there?
I'm talking about a great percentage of population that doesn't want to work. That's what I'm talking about.
I know,
it gets back to human nature. People are basically lazy. That's why more people take the elevator and the escalator than the stairs.
I see it
every single day. A body in motion tends to stay in motion. Body at rest tends to stay at rest. But human beings are basically lazy.
I don't think so.
Absolutely. You know why I go to work every day? Because I have a tremendous amount of bills I got to pay. You know, I went to Sarasota, Florida on Friday? Because I got bills to pay. Plus, I want to retire. I want to retire. I want money so I can retire.
It gives you a sense of purpose, John. That's why most people, I think, do want a job. Because it gives you a sense of purpose. It gives you a reason to get up. It's a positive thing. It's good for your health to work and have fellow employees that you can interact with.
John, that's a healthy, actualized human being you're talking about.
That
wants to get up because, first of all, they saw it with their father. And their father saw it with the grandfather. And the grandmother watched the grandfather go off. And then in this generation, the mom and dad both left the house to go to work. The child saw the benefit of work. If you take a person who's never saw their mother wake up or their father wake up on time, you go into a house where there's no alarm clock and there's no sense of responsibility, where all of a sudden does that person start to realize, hey, I should go get a job. I'm saying there's a big percentage of people, probably 12% of the U.S. population, that would not work if they didn't have to work and would never work again. Non-contributing members of society.
Okay. Now, and I don't know, you just pulled that out?
That's the poverty level. That's the poverty level that it's been since we declared the war on poverty.
Okay, it's 12%. But most of the people that are impoverished have all sorts of other conflicting issues,
yes.
Let's just say.
Okay.
And so what you're trying to talk about somebody like me who is an educated enough person that I could do various things, and I just don't have the will to actually do that. And I'm not drug addicted. I'm not an alcoholic.
Yeah.
I'm not high on, cocaine all the time. Just a regular person. Well, whatever. I mean,
pick a different drug than cocaine.
Why is that? Is that too dated?
No, I mean, yeah, but it's too expensive. Come on.
Too expensive.
The guy's not doing coke.
I did. Well, there are valleys.
It just shows you how out of it you are.
That's right. No, the idea is, though, that if you're, an able-bodied person, I don't know how many of these people that have no other kind of problems, no other complications, no other, kids and all of this.
Perfect.
Don't work.
Perfect. So let's take all the people that are living under the bridge over in Ballard. They're all in their tents. I'm saying, how many of them, if you gave them a house, how many of them would then work?
Well, it depends on it. Do they have the wherewithal, the mental, psychological, and physical wherewithal to be able to do that?
So then the problems are more than just a house. It's more than just a roof. It's all the additional problems, the baggage that you have with you in your tent as you're crapping on the sidewalk.
But
so you have
the house is number one.
The house is number one. But then, so then back to it. So once you're going to have a whole army of social workers that would then have to come in, and now we're going to get the person to go from the tent to the free home, and then in the free home, deal with all the additional problems. Because what we eventually want to be able to do is get them a job, right? They eventually want to become productive members of society.
Exactly.
Okay.
That's the goal's the same, John.
Yeah, I understand, Tom, but I just don't believe you'll ever get to it. I saw an interesting piece. I think you'd like this. This guy who came up with this theory a while ago, he's now dead, but here's his theory, that in 1986, 14% of Harvard graduates wanted to go into finance and make big money. Now it's 48% of Harvard graduates want to make gigantic money. So this guy's theory is tax the jobs. Like, for instance, if you want to go ahead and become
tax
a doctor.
Jobs.
Hold on. No, I know.
John won't be listening.
No. I like this.
Okay.
If you want to be a doctor, most people that want to be doctors are drawn to specialties that pay them a lot of money.
I wonder if that's true. Most doctors?
Doctors and lawyers, an incentive to train for lucrative specialties, leaving a shortage of general practitioners and public defenders.
Yeah.
So they're going into, they're becoming, orthopedic surgeons, right?
Yes.
And plastic surgeons and stuff. So now we have a dearth of general practitioners.
That's a recent development that is the bane of a lot of doctors right now saying, oh, remember, we used to think of it as a calling.
Right.
Now we're just thinking of it as a profession.
Money. So this guy is saying, so tax them. To make them realize, you know what, do I want to go into finance or would I rather go into something else? Do I want to go into this medical or would I rather go general practitioner?
No. Social engineering, John.
It is, in a way it is, because he's saying what's happening is that the people are realizing, hey, I can make more money by doing this, but to society benefit overall. See that?
Oh, are we going to come together on
that,
John?
Less inequality taxes. No, I just
thought I pointed it out. Let's hear it for social engineering. Yeah,
No.
It is true, because it's not attractive and they don't make as much money.
Right, so there's cheese on let's make it unattractive. Just like if you tax smoking, you get less of it. You tax jobs, you get less of it. This is a way of taxing the jobs that you get less of those jobs.
A lot of doctors out there, I'm sure, are saying, are you kidding? If you look at my malpractice stuff, you can't start taxing me anymore. It's a risk just to be a doctor.
We'll come right back for Tom Thinks People That Sleep in Homeless Tents Do Cocaine. You watch too many movies. That's your problem. Wolf of Wall Street.
Would you like to do cocaine
off someone's rear end?
I was trying to come up with something other than the opioid addiction issue, so I didn't want to say heroin.
All right, come right back. Where you live makes you happy. That seems like such an easy story. We'll have to find something else to talk about as well.
Oh, really? I found this more interesting because it didn't go where I thought it was going to go.
How about the 14-year-old kid from Denmark that ends up moving once? Did you see that part of
this?
Yes. All right. There we go. Now we got something. Come right back.
Denmark.
Come right back.
This Tom and Curly podcast is brought to you in part by Farrah.com. Sell your home without paying a listing commission. Farrah is a new way to sell your home. No listing commission and all the services, from an MLS listing to yard signs to pictures and more. Call Farrah at 1-800-571-FAIRA or go online to Farrah.com. Now, the Tom and Curly Podcast.
All right, here we go. 934, write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well at 98973. Write to us at MyNorthWest.com. Text as well, which apparently blew up the text line on Friday, Tom. I appreciate
right.
Andrew help making sure that the text line was working correctly. I feel bad for the other Andrew who had to read all of them.
That was great. Made for a lively show. 20 minutes nonstop on the head text.
Unbelievable. It's job tax. You can also, don't forget Keel Mortgage. Head out into the marketplace this weekend and you notice there's a house that you want to buy. Get Keel Mortgage. They are the experts. Get them on your side. 1-888-778-KIEL. That's Keel Mortgage, Keel Mortgage, CL53969. Special hello to Andrew and his mom, Judy. I ran into them on Saturday walking down the street. Andrew recognized my voice.
Which Andrew?
And he came from different Andrew.
Another Andrew. You know, we had three Andrews in here. I heard you guys, any of those.
I heard you guys talked about it for 10 minutes. all right. Okay. Let's see. Where you live has a bigger effect on your happiness and health than you may imagine. Because yes. I think people come into it thinking, I can understand that. If I live in a place that's really cold and wet all the time, I'll be miserable, so I don't want to live there. I live in some place where I have to drive a great distance, I won't be happy. But it's even has an even greater effect upon your happiness where you end up living, Tom.
So there are all sorts of complications to this factor. But, yeah, where you live does impact your health. We've done versions of these stories in the last couple of years. If you live closer to gyms or rivers or, you know, environmental factors will help you and your health. If you live in a suburb where you drive everywhere as opposed to living in the city or living in an area where you can walk everywhere, that they're actually components of their health factors in that sort of random thing. Weather's the big thing. You mentioned the weather first off, and you tend, if you live in a healthy environment without pollution, all that, you're better off. But one of the things they say, it's now becoming more and more obvious that they consider it sort of geographical health factors that a doctor at some point may soon say, where have you lived? Give me the various places you've lived and for how long, and he'll use that to help him sort of get a sense of where you you stand on things. If you live near a fast food joint, you're going to end up eating more fast food in general. And again, it's not anybody specifically, but to me, the key, and we kind of hinted at this just before the tease, the biggest surprise for me was they say, okay, so therefore, if you live in a nice sunny place like L.A., a lot of people like to move to L.A. The problem with L.A. is they have like 70% pollution issue, and so that counters it. But if you live in an environmentally ideal spot, is that the best place to live? And they said, yes, but it's complicated. Why? The average American is going to live in a dozen different places over the course of his life. And what they realize is psychologically uprooting yourself, the move also has health disadvantages.
Yes. And then they point to a 14-year-old kid in part of the study. They said there's a 14, they studied a bunch of kids in Denmark, and this one particular kid, and I guess others as well, that had moved a certain number of times, like five times or something. Every time they would move, a greater risk of the kid falling involved in drugs and alcohol.
Yes.
Like cocaine.
And why is this? Because you sort of break up the social network. I remember when I was in grade school, like third or fourth grade, there was a kid.
Kid?
Just the opposite. We'd gone to school with this kid from kindergarten, you know, so 5 years we knew him. And all of a sudden, in third or fourth grade, his dad got a job in another town and he was moving. And I remember feeling the kid did not want to move.
No.
He was upset. And we were all outraged. How could the dad do that? I mean, all of his friends were here. He says that uprooting of the social network does more damage to a kid psychologically. It's sort of like the impact of divorce on kids. It's like some kids deal with it, some kids don't.
Mm-hmm.
What is the impact? When you uproot yourself, you have to rebuild your social network. The woman that wrote this article said that she had to move a lot with her family. It was like, you ended up not even bothering trying to create a social network because you figured, well, in 2 years, I'm going to have to move anyway, and it's so heartbreaking to do that.
Mm-hmm.
So one of the arguments, and this is interestingly, they say people who hadn't moved at all in the past 5 years reported being happier than people that did move.
Yes.
And so maybe one of the keys is maybe Americans shouldn't be moving so much. Rather than living in 12 different places, and I don't think they mean just like moving from a house like you did, you know, a house to a house in the same area. But the idea of uprooting your social network, that might be one of the reasons why you aren't as maybe healthy and or happy as you might have been if you hadn't moved.
And we move more than any other country. Americans move.
We're on the move.
Let's say that people move for jobs or for relationships. Those are the two main reasons. So you leave the one job because it's not doing well. You've lost your job or you've gotten a pay cut. So you go somewhere else for a better opportunity. People always go for a better opportunity to avoid things like taxes. So the idea that they would leave one area and go to another, so they were probably unhappy when they established a new place. So they bring their baggage with them. Or they believe, hey, I'll move from here and I'll move there. The old Irish adage is that wherever you go, your troubles follow you.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
So you left one place thinking things would be so much better, but the habits that you have, you've taken in just to a new area. I think that we were going to move, get sick of where we were living, and somebody said, it's too late now. Your kids are in their teens. And it would cause such problems for the social network. Because I remember as a kid moving from one city to another and standing in front of the classroom. I was in second grade. And the nun saying, attention, everyone. I'd like you to meet our new student. And then introducing me as John Curley. And my name was Michael Curley, right?
Yeah.
And then I said, it's Michael. She goes, no, it's John. And I said, no, it's Michael. And some kid in the front row goes, you don't even know your name. And everybody laughed.
Yeah.
And I thought, God, this is a terrible way to start. But the, and then the other, another, like 2 weeks later, another kid came in. And you saw that kid stand there. It's absolutely the worst.
Yeah.
Nobody wants to sit with you. You have to start all over again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now,
you got to pick out somebody to beat up.
But here was the argument. If you can survive that, you're better off. You know, we often talk about, why are you so good on the air at improvising?
Yeah.
Because you said you were forced to, because of your dyslexia,
right.
You were forced to not depend on cue cards and the like. You'd have to, and now that makes you a better person. I'm wondering if the people that have had to move, you know, like Army brats.
Yeah,
you know,
what about the Army brats in this story?
Are they better off as adults because they learn to fit in with anybody and everybody, if you can survive that. Now, if it turns you into a social recluse and you get high on cocaine all the time, then maybe that's going to be a problem.
Here's the question, Tom. Why didn't they study Army brats? I guess because when they move to a new place, have a built-in community, right? Don't they normally, if you're moving from one Army spot to another, you're moving to another town so that you have a group that's there to support you.
I mean, maybe. The thing is that I don't know if there are a lot of Army brats in Denmark. Because this is one particular Danish study that they're doing. But, I mean, I'm sure there have been lots of studies about, because that's like a great control case.
Mm-hmm.
People that go around to various different military installations, how they respond. But the idea is you should think about how you, where you live as an important factor. They say 30% of your DNA is responsible for 30% of your the genetic outcome, but 70% of what you do is influenced by other factors. Environment's one. And just so you don't think this is all pitched in one direction, the woman that's writing this article, the reason she was spurred on to write it is she was forced. She loved L.A. She was felt that L.A. was home. That's where she had moved as a college kid. She loved it. She didn't want to go to D.C. with her husband. She did, and she realized, I'm here, and I'm resenting it. I've been here 6 years, and I never liked it, but... She said, I went back to L.A. and met one of my friends, one of my social network friends. She was going through a divorce, and she realized, you know what? It may be not good to live in D.C. if you could live in L.A., but I'd rather be happily married in a place that I'm unhappy than be divorced in a place that I would be happy. So there still are more important factors than your environment.
My mom trying to tell me that my dad loved us, and she said, your father had an opportunity to move from IBM in Philadelphia to White Plains, New York. IBM stands for I've Been Moved. and he turned down that job promotion, which would have made him so much more money, even way, way up there. But he came home and said, I can't do it to the kids.
Wow.
Yeah. So he decided, nope, I'll stay in Philadelphia. And once you pass up one move on IBM, they're done with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that was it. There you go. Didn't want to move for us. Take a fast break. Come back. Talk about the fact that now, hopefully, we get this online betting in the city and in the state of Washington. I would say that the Native American tribe... Gaming Commission would probably have something to say about this. But the Supreme Court ruled today on it.
But it's not online. See, that's what's weird. It's sports betting.
Yes.
The idea that right now there were only, you know, like Nevada was given this pass, but everybody else wasn't allowed. Now they say it's states' rights issue.
Get ready. We'll be right back. Tom and Curley right here on Cairo Radio.
Hi, I'm Tina Sorensen, General Sales Manager for Cairo Radio. When Tom and Curley fans miss their favorite show, they pull it up on demand. Maybe you should advertise here. Make sure you're reaching your customers anywhere they listen. Give me a call and I'll help you out. 206-726-6819.
Here comes legalized sports betting, Tom. Is it 34 states? I know 20 had been actively...
32. So 18 apparently already have a... laws on the books that this Supreme Court ruling won't affect, but 32 other states, they're guessing Washington's going to be one of those states within 5 years, not immediately. They have a couple of front runners The first like 8 or 9 states could get it up in 2 years, but 5 years we'll have it. Maybe.
So back in December, the Supreme Court heard arguments from New Jersey, brought the case forward saying this federal ban is illegal, or at least it's not fair to the states. Let the states decide what they want to do when it comes to betting. And the Supreme Court ruled 7-2. They just came out with this about an hour ago, that they will allow states to have legalized betting.
6-3.
Was it 6-3?
That's what this is. The court's 6-3 decision. Uh-huh. Struck down the Professional and Amateur Sports Protection Act.
So I was relying upon CBS for accurate information, Tom.
Well, okay, so maybe we have a dispute.
More fake news.
This is Washington Post, though. They're also arbiters of fake news, according to the president.
Listen, here's the thing. It's passed. It's passed. And now.
It's been 5-4.
In certain states.
9-0.
In certain states, you'll be able to bet legally on your favorite baseball games and basketball games and football games legally. Now, people have been doing it for years illegally through
right.
sort of a black market or over in the UK and moving money
yes.
around. So now they're starting to say the states are saying, hey, you know what? Why don't we get the money? Let's allow us to have a piece of it. And also the major sports franchises will get a piece of that money as well.
Yeah, but, I mean, they're the ones that were against it. I mean, so the major league sports franchises, the professional leagues, were against this because they thought it challenged the integrity of the game. Like, mm-hmm. it would be too hard to police. And the Supreme Court ruled. It was. They said, you know, the Congress has a right, if they want to do this, to establish what is legal and what isn't legal.
Uh-huh.
But what they can't do is put a block up which says states can't consider it unless they come up with their own federal legislation about gambling. And so that's how the rule went. So then the question, I guess, is this a good thing or a bad thing? The people that won say this is going to be a great thing, and it's going to be a boon for the very leagues that were fighting it if they get a piece of the action.
Yes, they won
the
part
state,
of it.
The government's going to get a piece of the action. I mean, there are a lot of people that are going to be able to benefit from this. Again, that's the pro. I
$150 billion a year illegal wagering.
Is that right?
That's from the American Gaming Association. Again, if you can believe CBS with its fake news.
The thing is now, and Washington Post has something like 60 billion Americans bet. I don't know if that's illegal, but it's like offshore betting to the tune of 60 million a year Americans alone. So anyway, so it's a huge business. And I guess the question is, unless you have some moral grounds, you know, to object to it. And I know there are a lot of people that think this is not a healthy thing. Psychologically for any kind of society. But if you set those aside, I don't know what the biggest concerns are. Are you concerned that Major League Baseball might be fixed, or the NBA or the NCAA might get fixed? I mean, I don't know. I mean, I know you have gambling scandals all the time. But
right.
to
well,
me,
that was one of the things that I think the NBA had a referee that they found out was involved, involved in that kind of thing.
Yeah.
Well, the states highly promote lottery, which is one of the biggest mm-hmm. ripoffs when it comes to gambling you can possibly imagine. The worst odds possible. But the state has entire ads that they put out. They've got a place over at the SeaTac Airport.
So you're against this? Sports betting?
No. The lottery is a tax on the dumb.
Yeah.
This is a tax on people.
On dumber?
No. These aren't dumb because you have better odds. You have better chances of actually winning on these types of bets.
Do you?
Yes. Plus, just to take some of the money out of the illegal black market area.
Yeah. But that's the question. I don't know that it's a better odds. Most of us are going to lose our shirts. But the thing is, we want to.
No. When I used to do.
When you go to Vegas,
I don't go to Vegas.
Okay, but Vegas, you lose your shirt.
No, you don't.
Well, no, you individually. But overall, it's a winning. And the reason it's an industry is because it's successful to the people that run the casinos, not the people that gamble in the casinos.
Got it.